Chapter 33. Wilson Wavers. Colonel House was convinced that we are the only nation on Earth to get them, the Allies, out of trouble. House, 2, 156. In 1918 it became evident, the Allies were saved from drowning by the United States, but in 1916 the French government shrugged its shoulders at the mention of American intervention. Yet Grey told House, Americans would risk being treated in Great Britain as a negligible quantity. The Allies were certain of inflicting a phenomenal defeat on the Kaiser by summer. Ambassador Page concurred with this expectation and warned Washington of the necessity of imposing a crushing defeat without negotiations on the Germans and for the Allies to dictate any conditions they wanted. House, 2, 257. While waiting for such a wondrous outcome, House departed for Germany on January 20, 1916. His report to Wilson is rather depressing. I must say before entering Germany through the Swiss border that everywhere I have gone I found in the governments the same obstinacy, the same selfishness and the same hypocrisy. House, 2, 188. Despite his pro-British bias he was rather dejected. History will, I fear, severely judge the men who were selfish enough and had so little foresight to let such a tragedy happen. The gap between House's words and deeds left many perplexed. The German Chancellor told him, I do not understand why my voice remains without echo. I deplore war and its frightful consequences, and I say loudly that my conscience cannot bear its responsibility. House, 2, 163. House recognized he had been well received in Germany when he returned to Paris on February 3, 1916. He also realized that the Germans were losing patience. The withdrawal of their submarines from combat duty under American pressure had cut off their supply lines and had exasperated the army and especially the navy. The blockade had deprived women and children of food. Millions of them went hungry and some died of starvation. House callously wrote that, I find it fair war for the Entente to try to starve the Germans and reduce them to sue for peace. The British blockade was causing famine and it was now likely that the military would change this situation by returning to submarine warfare in the Atlantic and elsewhere. House was struck by the fighting spirit of the German High Command. On February 14, 1916 in London, House attended a dinner with Grey, Balfour, Lloyd George and Asquith. He gave them his impressions, the Germans are at peak efficiency and they can strike a decisive blow, break through the lines and occupy Calais or Paris. If they do, it is possible that the war will end. At the same time the Allies were also rushing to breach the German lines. Neither side reached its objectives. They would slaughter each other by the hundreds of thousands. Lloyd George was unconcerned and stuck to his opinion that the war could go on indefinitely. Verdun illustrated this policy, 650,000 died to gain ground the size of a football field, and then it was lost again. For 2 years, across an area 400 miles wide, a war of attrition would wear on, a few feet would be won and then lost. Millions of men would die, powerless, in this slaughterhouse. Even Churchill, who had been responsible for the massacre of Gallipoli, would write later, there is no more bloody war than a war of attrition. Future generations will find it incredible and horrible that such practices could have been imposed by the military. Churchill failed to mention, however, that Poincaré, Grey and House were not military men. House now firmly believed that only America could pull Europe out of its terrible dead end. In other words, America could add another mountain of dead to the other mountain of dead already blocking the horizon. House was ready to confront the Germans with his unacceptable plan. He was getting ready to explain, with a tearful eye, to the American people that he had tried everything and that war was the last recourse. The Germans went out of their way to avoid war with the United States. They were fighting on the Russian front, in Serbia, in Romania, in Italy, on the Dardanelles, and in Asia Minor as well as on the entire breadth of the French front, and they had no wish to deal with another enemy. To keep the peace with the United States, the German submarine fleet remained at its base at Heligoland. German captains were punished by their government for their mistakes. Large indemnities were paid even in such debatable cases as the Lusitania. In March 1916, 8 Allied vessels were sunk. Each carried American passengers, but none of them lost their lives, thanks to German caution. Indifferent to German accommodation, House asked Wilson to break diplomatic relations with Germany and presented the president with a draft note to this effect. On April 11, 1916, House even cabled the United States ambassador in Berlin to warn him about the possibility. On the same date, the Germans once again informed Washington of their willingness to avoid all incidents at sea. On April 14, 1916, the Reich ambassador in Washington presented House with an official document. It is noteworthy that foreign diplomats went directly to House and not Wilson. "My dear Colonel House, my government is ready to conduct submarine warfare with all due respect to the rights of neutrals. It is standing by the assurances already provided to your government, and it had given such precise instructions to its submarine commanders that within the bounds of human foresight errors can no longer be committed. If, contrary to our intentions, some do occur, our government is committed to correct them by all the means in its power." The ambassador added that this assurance was given notwithstanding British violations of international law and British use of American citizens to cover up their arms traffic. House convinced Wilson to issue a strongly worded answer to the conciliatory German offer. On April 18, 1916, House replied through the president, "Unless the Imperial government declares immediately that it will forthwith forsake its current methods of submarine warfare against passenger ships and freighters, the United States government has no other alternative than to break diplomatic relations with the German Empire." House openly bragged he had forced the president's hand. "I called on my best means of persuasion to keep him in a state of mind impervious to any compromise." Would House succeed in breaking relations? The Germans would not oblige him. They announced that submarine commanders had been sent new instructions, and they would be ready to do their utmost in keeping military operations, during the entire war, strictly within combat areas. The concessions were humiliating for Germany, but the United States government was also asked to exercise its neutrality and be watchful that all belligerent powers adhere to principles of humanity. If the United States government declined, Germany would then face a new situation and would be absolutely free to act accordingly. House, 2, 271. The American people were kept in the dark about the whole affair, and no newspapers ever mentioned any of the real concessions made by Germany. Wilson was perplexed and asked House what he thought of the German answer. House admitted that since Germany had accepted the American conditions, there was no valid excuse to break diplomatic relations with Berlin. House, 2, 272. House used the word excuse rather than motive or reason. On March 10, 1916, House, using the code the British government had devised for his exclusive use, cabled Sir Edward Grey, "If you deem it useful, I will renew our offers by cable every 2 weeks. Let me know, if you please, whether I should act this way or on the contrary wait until you signal me. Be assured, my dear friend, that I think of you all the time and that I would like somehow to lighten the burden weighing so heavily on your shoulders." Thus Grey was kept informed by House about everything. On May 27, 1916, Grey was told on the same day the terms of a new German offer. "The document is of great importance, dear Sir Edward. I want to attract your attention to one thing. The German Chancellor declares that Germany would accept a peace based on the borders of states as they exist today on the maps." House, 2, 321. It was the end of May and Germany was victorious on both the Western and Eastern fronts. Yet it was willing to give up the gains its army had won to that point. The Allies would not hear of it. Jusserand, the French ambassador in Washington, reacted immediately, "France will not accept under any circumstances listening to plans which include the word peace." House, 2, 322. Grey wrote to House endorsing this fanatical reaction, "No Englishman will tell France at this stage, don't you think it's time to make peace?" The Allies interpreted Germany's desire for peace as a sign of weakness and were all the more determined to press on with a war of attrition. Their greatest fear at this stage was Germany's acceptance of the American peace plan. At the time, any American input was seen as interference. House was aware of the European view when he wrote, "American participation in the conflict could become embarrassing for the Allies if it touched on the secret treaties which Wilson knows nothing about." House, 2, 323. The British wanted American dollars and American soldiers but rejected Wilson's sermonizing about land grabs and colonialism. Wilson, as obtuse as he was, had finally awakened to the schemes of the Allies. He suspected, wrote Seymour, certain Allies of pursuing selfish plans, and he was not as convinced as his friend House of the necessity of taking sides with them. His reservations were such that at the end of 1916 American policy could appear to have turned against the Allies.